KHOI, Story City in Ames.
Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with interim manager and engineer Mike Murphy. And KHOI's Sam Wormley is waiting in the wings. And because KHOI is the heart of our Iowa community, Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana, is with us. And later in the hour, she will share her heart-to-heart and tune-in Tuesday messages. Well, folks, today we are under a winter weather watch, and our morning starts out with a mix of rain, and this is potential, sleet and snow. It's about a 70% chance for that. Clouds are going to linger throughout the day. We're going to get near highs of 35. There's currently an east-southeasterly wind, and it's going to shift out of the north. We're going to get gusts up to 25, perhaps 30 miles an hour. So if you're out and about and we do get that precipitation, slow down, because snow and ice accumulations, it's going to be hopefully less than an inch, but could make for some slippery conditions. Yesterday, our illustrious Mike Murphy broadcast on Local Talk a program that Pat Schlierbaum had with biometrician for the Iowa DNR, Dr. Tyler Harms. They were discussing CWD, and that was a 2019 interview, and I just wanted to update listeners that the spread of chronic wasting disease, CWD, in Iowa has increased. It's now been detected in 10 counties, and they include Allamakee, Clayton, Winnesheek, Fayette, Dubuque, Jackson, Appanoose, Wayne, Decatur, and Woodbury. So you can see that it's the east coast of the state, along with some of the southern counties down along the Missouri border and into the south central area. I'm also going to mention, you know, yesterday, especially on Democracy Now!, we observed the passing of Archbishop Desmond Tutu. That was well covered yesterday. A really significant individual who was anti-apartheid, got some real democracy going, was a great humanitarian. Wonderful messages. He won the Nobel Prize for Peace. There were a number of individuals we lost in the last week. There are two giant oaks, as Pat would say, that I want to highlight, and that was Dr. E.O. Wilson, who was a preeminent scientist. He was a naturalist, author, and teacher, and he actually introduced two new scientific disciplines called island biogeography and sociobiology. He passed away at the age of 92. The other individual, Dr. Thomas Lovejoy, was also a preeminent scientist, naturalist, and author. He was a true environmental advocate. He was one of the early folks to raise the alarm on climate change. He was a climate activist, and he coined the phrase biological diversity or biodiversity. So two extremely prominent individuals in that area of our environment and our Earth's health.
I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds.
It's Feathered Friend Tuesday, where we visit with Stephanie and Todd Burris and
Dr. Tyler Harms
about birds and other little creatures of the wild.
Tyler Harms, Executive Director of Iowa Young Birders. Tyler, can you reflect back on what your group has done this past year, 2021?
Yeah, it's been a really great year in 2021, Mike. Took a little hiatus there from our in-person field trips due to the pandemic, but we started back up with field trips in this past year, and I was just looking back the other day at some of the events we've had, and didn't seem like it was a very busy year for us, but when I reflected back, it was quite a busy year for us. We started out in January and February with some really exciting virtual learning opportunities. We had Scott Weidensaw, who's a world-renowned author and co-founder of Project Snowstorm, which is a citizen science project that tracks snowy owl eruptions across North America. He joined us to talk a little bit about snowy owls in January, and then we followed that event in February with Bruce and Marlene Ayersman from the Iowa Wildlife Center talking about the owls of Iowa with an emphasis on eastern screech owls. Both of those virtual events were probably a couple of our best attended events, that we've had thus far. So that was really exciting. We started back up with our in-person field trips in May, and we partnered with Prairie Rivers of Iowa, based out of Ames here, for a family-friendly bird hike last May at McFarland Park. I think probably one of my most favorite events that we've ever hosted was our aerial insectivore event that we hosted in August in partnership with Wild Birds Unlimited here in Ames and also the Octagon Center for the Arts. We had nearly 50 people attend that evening event to watch chimney swifts and common nighthawks do their thing, and big brown bats, or at least we assume big brown bats, here in downtown Ames. It's been just a really fun year.
You know, you talked about snowy owls last January. Well, it appears it may not be officially an eruption, but we sure are seeing a lot of snowy owls, at least central to northern part of the state.
Yeah, I think the definition of an eruption from a number of owls is probably a tough one. But, you know, I certainly think we are seeing a bit of maybe a minor eruption this year. It's certainly not to the scale that we saw back in 2013 or maybe even in 2018. But there are definitely a number of reports of snowy owls and lots of photos popping up on Facebook and other social media outlets and on the Iowa Bird Listserv as well. So keep your eyes open. Take a look at those white objects in the crop fields. Unfortunately, the number of white objects in crop fields was augmented a couple weeks ago with the 70-mile-per-hour winds that we had. But
so there's a few plastic bags and other white things.
More than what's normally out there, for sure.
What do snowy owls eat this time of year as they're coming down to the central states?
Yeah, that's a good question. In the tundra, they're focusing primarily on lemmings, voles, maybe some other small birds that they can take opportunistically. And in central Iowa, for example, probably not all that much different. Obviously not lemmings down here in central Iowa, but small mammals, voles, mice, perhaps some small birds, if they get the opportunity, anything like that that they can find, they'll certainly take advantage of. And it's interesting, the places that you see them tend to be landscapes that look very similar to what you might expect to see in the tundra. Very flat, pretty barren landscape.
Perhaps the biggest thing that they're used to seeing would be a fence post. Some of us have seen them on power line poles, a few of those things. Where they normally reside, at least for the breeding and when they're hunting, is the tundra.
That's right. A power pole in central Iowa is probably a pretty tall object for what they're used to.
Now, I've had an opportunity to see one of the owls here in Iowa, but I've also had an opportunity in northeastern Wisconsin along the Green Bay to see a few. Was there some research done that they actually will go out and feed on some of the diving ducks?
I think that's correct. And if I recall, Scott Weidensaw, when he presented last January to the Young Birders, he'd actually talked about an owl that I believe it spent the night out on the ice on one of the Great Lakes. And they were able to track the movement of that owl overnight. And it was not because the owl was flying around. It was actually because the owl was resting on the ice, which was floating and moving on the lake. So that was kind of an interesting observation that they were able to get from one of their GPS transmitted owls.
Anything else to add about owls?
Nothing else to add about owls. I guess I'll maybe circle back to Iowa Young Birders and just mention that we have a really exciting year of events planned. We're actually coming into our 10th year of offering field trips. So July will mark our 10th birthday. Because of that, we're trying to plan a really exciting and full schedule of events for 2022. Keep an eye on our website and our events calendar. And try to join us if you can.
And what's that website?
www.iowayoungbirders.org.
Very good. All right, Stephanie, we're seeing some interesting critters at the feeders. And what are people seeing this time of year, the winter months, the common winter birds here in town and perhaps around the suburbs?
Some common birds that you might see are cardinals, mm-hmm. chickadees, white-breasted nuthatch, juncos. Yeah. Juncos are usually on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
House finches, goldfinches as well. However, they are more of an olive drab shade, so they're not as recognizable.
They've shed their breeding plumage. They have their winter coat on.
Mm-hmm.
There's a particular group that folks are interested in this time of year because they often see them in suet, ears of corn, that kind of thing. Those are the woodpeckers. What would people expect to see in their yards when it comes to woodpeckers?
The most common ones around here this time of year are the downy woodpeckers and red-bellied woodpeckers. You also may see a hairy woodpecker. They are larger than the downy, but have similar coloration.
Can you tell the difference between males and females?
Yes, the male has a bright splash of red on the back of its head.
What would be a way to differentiate between the downy and the hairy?
The size, the length.
Mm-hmm. 6 inches for probably downies, around 6 inches, maybe closer to 9 for hairies.
And then the beak size. The hairy woodpeckers have a beak about twice as long.
The beak is actually proportionately on a hairy the same length about as its skull. Whereas with a downy woodpecker, it's much smaller than the width of its skull.
You mentioned red-bellied woodpeckers. Now, the red-bellied woodpeckers that I see usually have red heads. What's with that name?
Guess the males in spring actually do have a little bit of splash of red down on their abdomen, whereas red-headed woodpeckers do not.
Okay, feeding tips for these little guys. Woodpeckers, I always associate them with insects, boring for them in the trees, scrummaging around in the leaf litter for those that will feed on the ground. I see downies and hairies quite often on corn stalks or cup plant or even compass plant this time of year. What should somebody think about feeding around a feeder station?
Woodpeckers definitely love nuts, so peanuts, tree nuts. They also like sunflower seeds and, of course, suet.
We talked about some of the identification, the feed. How about protection or habitat? What do we need to keep in mind around our feeder stations or our yards for these birds this time of year?
With any birds, the habitat is real important. And so for woodpeckers, having trees, they need the trees both for excavating nesting cavities and for finding insects. And then trees or shrubs provide protection for them from weather, predators, those sorts of things. Having feeders positioned somewhat closer to shrubs and trees is always a good idea rather than out in the middle of your yard where it's easier for predators to see them. And yeah, so it's important that they have a quick escape route into some kind of cover to protect them. If you don't have any shrubs or trees immediately near your feeders, like this time of year, it's a good time to recycle your Christmas tree. If you've got a live Christmas tree, mm-hmm. put it there by your feeding station, and birds will use that to perch on and to get out of the cold from, and it probably provides them just some sense of security.
So I read in my Birdwatcher's Digest the other day that red-bellied woodpeckers are essentially the only regular feeder-attending bird that would stand up to a blue jay successfully.
Does size have something to do with that, you think? Or
well,
just,
I think probably size and a nasty big bill.
We've seen them drive off all kinds of things on the Cornell lab for years. We've seen feathers fly off of mourning doves.
Yeah.
And they're the boss when they're on there, it seems like.
That's one thing, you know, folks, when they have their feeders, they look, oh, watch them feeding, but it's really neat to sit there and watch their behavior and their interactions. There's a real pecking order, not only between individuals, but species.
Pun intended, right?
Pun intended, yes. We mentioned this before, but what about water?
The birds definitely need a water source, and in the winter when the water sources that they're using are frozen over, it's really helpful to them to have a heated bird bath. So you can either get the kind where you just set the heater in your existing bird bath, or you can get ones that are heated through and through, so it keeps the water open a little more evenly.
So is that just for drinking, or do they actually preen?
They also use it for preening.
So do we need to put like little candles and bubble bath and a brush out for them?
They're not picky.
Bird spa, yeah.
Well, I had an interesting fact that many people don't know about. Woodpeckers are one of the few birds that have the zygodactyl feet.
Please explain what zygodactyl feet are, Steph.
It means that they have two toes pointing forward and two toes pointing backwards. Most birds have three toes that point forward and one that goes backwards.
And why do you suppose they would have that characteristic?
Well, it helps them clinging on branches to climb up and down tree bark, because they don't only just go up, they also go back down.
Sounds like woodpeckers are something that we need to be paying attention to. Thanks for sharing your information and insights. Tyler, thank you for updating us on the young birders. I want to thank Dr. Tyler Harms, Todd Burris, and Stephanie Burris for your time. Wild Birds Unlimited, located at
213 Duff Avenue.
What's the last message that we leave our listeners with?
Never leave home without your binoculars.
I like birds.
I would have to play that because I need to be reminded I'm a transplant Iowan. I'm originally from Wisconsin, but my Iowa friends would be really angry with me and upset if I didn't remember to point out that today in 1846, December 28th, Iowa became a state of the United States. So happy birthday, Iowa. In fact, you were a couple of years before Wisconsin was, and I can't quite figure that out, but I know the history behind all of that, and I would encourage everyone to read about the history of how that came about. And if you're just tuning in, I am Mike Metz along with Mike Murphy and Sam Wormley and Anna Magnuson, part of our KHOI team. And right now, we're going to talk a little bit about the OLLIE program from Iowa State University, and Sam's going to give us a bit of background on that program. Welcome, Sam.
Well, thanks, Mike. The Osher Lifelong Learning Institute is one of about 125 that are endowed by Bernard Osher, and that's where the name Osher Lifelong Learning Institute comes from. The acronym for that is just OLLIE, and we say O-L-L-I, OLLIE, at Iowa State. If our listeners really want to know more about the program, be able to see what's in the winter catalog, and register for courses, they can go to OLLI.iastate.edu. They'll find everything they need to know about the program and what it offers for them. It's basically a set of courses that are available for people 50 years and older to just enhance their learning throughout the rest of their lives.
That's great, Sam. Thanks for that info. I know that a couple of us are involved with that program. I believe Anna Magnuson is going to be venturing in, dipping her toe in that as well. I've had the honor and pleasure of offering some courses, and it's been very enjoyable from my end. I've taken a number of the courses too. Anna, do you have a good nervousness going into this, or what's your feeling about why did you get involved in OLLI?
Well, there's certainly butterflies in my stomach about teaching the class because I've never done this before. And so I think I was talking to both of you before the show about how I'm teaching a class through the University of Dayton in Ohio through their OLLI program. So I'm super excited, but I think that I'm so overenthusiastic, I have 1,000 slides. I think that's probably too many.
I don't think you'd really have to flick through them a couple every second to get through that if you left room for discussion, that's for sure. Okay. Well, I want to welcome...
I'm definitely a novice, but...
Go ahead. Say that again. I'm sorry.
No. I'm just going to count on you and Sam to help me cut those slides down to from 1,000 to 5.
Okay. One of the courses, OLLI, this year has to do with... grandparents, parents, and caring adults helping children succeed in reading or through reading. And I want to welcome Carolyn Johns. She's one of the course facilitators for the Iowa State program. Good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning to you.
Please just tell us a little bit about the class that you are involved in. I know we have other folks as well that are involved with you in that class.
Absolutely. We are so excited about the topic of early literacy and what caring adults can do. We have a team of 5 of us that are actually involved in the class. All of us are board members of the Raising Readers in Story County nonprofit organization. And each one of the presenters brings some special expertise. What we share is the passion. We have actually a series of 3 classes. The first one, we have Iowa State Professor Dr. Constance Beecher, Connie to us, and her specialty is research about early language and literacy development, and we'll be featuring her in session 1. So we'll be sharing with people what actually happens in the brains of kids in those first 1,000 days and beyond. Let me take a breath there and see if you want to hear about the other 2 sessions too.
Sure. Go right into it, Carolyn.
Okay. All right. So after session 1, we are going to feature what's actually happening here in Story County to help every child get started to maximize their early development. And we will be sharing what some of the Raising Readers in Story County programs are. Most people are probably familiar that have had children. Familiar with the Reach Out and Read program, where doctors give books to children at all of their checkups between birth and age 5. We provide the books for that. And then we have several other programs that we will be featuring. And people may want to get involved in that, in any of these. And then in session 3, we're getting down into what each person can actually do. We believe that we're giving people the opportunity to change the life trajectory of young children. And, I mean, how exciting is that?
Yeah.
So we will have video clips and personal testimonies about the difference that caring adults can make in a child's life. Isn't that exciting?
Yes, it is. And I can personally attest to getting an early start in reading. Gosh, I wouldn't be the person I am today if my folks hadn't had me start reading before I entered kindergarten. I think at my time, you know, that was back in the last century, that was probably maybe not as normal for folks. I had caring parents that always had books in front of me and my sisters. Seemed like you'd grumble when you'd get a book for a Christmas present or something, but then you'd get involved in that book. We always made trips to the library, all those things. So very important. I'd like to say it's made me a well-squared individual because I've got some edges to round out yet.
Oh, dear. Well, you're absolutely right. Books make a difference. I mean, there's a lot of research nowadays, and there is indication that if a child has even 25 books in their home, it makes a huge difference in their futures. You know, not only reading, when we sit with a child on our lap and read, there's a whole lot of nurturing, relationship building that goes on there. So we're not only teaching them early literacy skills, but we're also developing their emotional stability and just setting them up for a really brighter future.
You know, Carolyn, there's an old saying. This happens especially if me and a friend doing something and we suddenly realize we're not doing it right. And the old saying was, well, you don't learn that in books. But I think your example of the nurturing and being a well-rounded individual goes counter to that, that you do learn that kind of thing in books, for sure.
Oh, right. And another interesting thing is that books provide more unusual vocabulary words. You know, just the conversation that an adult might have with a child is enriched when there's a book involved, and you can use the vocabulary words that are in that book, and it prompts you to talk about interesting things. So that's just another little tidbit.
Carolyn, could you please just tell our listeners, maybe you don't have the list of your other instructors, but could you just give us a quick background on the other folks that are helping you out?
Absolutely. Sure. In addition to Connie Beecher, we have Dr. Neil Rowe, who also received his PhD here at Iowa State. It's a real advantage to be in a community where we have a university like that. Neil is a father of three girls. He has a particular interest in how dads can help, and that would apply to grandfathers also. And he's particularly interested in how communities can help. So that's an interest of his. Malai Amphar is another one of our participants. She has been the lead for our local Story County Reads program. She has been hired by United Way. And her expertise has been noticed by the National Grade Level Reading Association. So they have hired her now to be a coach for communities like ours in the country. But she is staying, she's going to be on our Raising Readers board, so we aren't losing her locally. So community networking is a special treat for expertise for her. And then last but by no means least is Lynn Carey, who has recently retired from the Ames Public Library. She has been acting as the interim director for Raising Readers for the last 5 months, I believe, 6 months. Let me just give you a little preview. We have now hired a new executive director, who is Carrie McPartland. And so she will be working with us starting sometime in January.
Great.
So Lynn is going to be continue on our board as the vice president. So there you go.
Lynn Carey, I think we know her for some reason around here at KHOI. very active in community issues, that's for sure. Carolyn, absolutely. We're going to wrap it up. Is there any last message before we close out? And also, please give me your website, the Raising Readers website.
www.raising-readers.org. And we will be updating it as we turn over our board. Well, that sounds extreme, but as we add new members to our board and a new executive director. So there will be some significant updates coming to that website. Yeah, and I just would close by saying it's kind of like Godmother and apple pie. We're in an area that is so important, and we're just excited to share with people. One other thing, let me just say, Sam is my role model. I've taken several of Sam's courses, and if we can do half as well as he does, we'll be excited.
Yeah, Sam kind of got me involved too in his own little way with the Ollie and some other things. But I get back at him on Science Bites, let's just put it that way, here on KHOI. So thank you, Carolyn.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Sam, do you have any parting words before we go on?
Well, again, I would like to have people to go to olli.iastate.edu, and they can find all the information about the classes, how to register, how to sign up, and it gives them an opportunity to enrich their lives.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Carolyn. And thank you, Anna, for your part as well. Good luck, Anna.
Thank you. I'm going to need it.
We want to welcome Susan Guiazda now from the city of Ames. Good morning, Susan. How are you doing after a fine holiday weekend?
It seems like a long time since I've been here.
Yeah, and you're kind of a short timer this week.
I am. The city hall and most city offices will be closed on Friday for the New Year's holiday. So it is a short work week for city employees. Although, as you know, many employees work 24/7, so not all departments are able to close. Some of those services we provide need supervision all the time. So you'll see people at our utilities. You'll see our police and fire department certainly out there working. There will be somebody there if you have an emergency, we'll be able to respond.
Speaking of somebody there, our guest for the morning has not shown up, at least on the Zoom. So I don't know if that's something you can do on your end or if...
Well, we'll just keep going. I've got some other information to share.
Sure.
I'm not sure what happened, but I don't know if we've touched base on our last Tuesday council meeting when the city council did move forward on a goal for climate action planning. They chose a rather aggressive approach to kick off the process, which again, the goal, which is an 83% reduction in greenhouse gas by 2030 and net zero by 2050, is in alignment with other international and national goals. And it is a roadmap or a plan. At this point in the game, we don't know what the cost would be or what kind of action we would have to take to achieve that goal, but that's sort of the path that we're down. And so based on a lot of feedback from lots of emails, the city council received a survey that was taken by over 900 people. Our supplemental input committee provided feedback. Based on all that input, I think the council felt that an aggressive goal was what people were requesting, and that at least we would start there. And then we would look at the plan presented by our consultants, and then we would make adjustments and move forward.
Sure. Well, I think in this case, it's much better to shoot high. We've only got one chance for our climate, I believe, in aiming high and hopefully hitting that mark, and if not getting close, much better approach. It's going to cost a little bit on the front end, but the penalty at the end is not very, very good if we don't meet our goals, that's for sure. It's counter to the old adage, shoot low, sheriff, he's riding a Shetland. In this case, we shoot high.
So. Well, that opinion was expressed by many people who felt that it was a signal. It was a signal to the community that we're taking this seriously, that we want to move forward in an aggressive way, that we want to look at doing basically front loading, doing as much stuff as we can up front, and looking to technology and to other communities to kind of pick up different ideas as we get closer to 2050. It's very aspirational, and there was some debate at the council meeting if it was feasible. There was no debate about support of the project, and I want to be clear about that. All the council was very, very supportive of moving forward on a climate action plan. The path to get there was probably the topic of the most debate, and people had different ideas, and in the end, they all rallied around the idea, okay, the decision's been made, let's move forward. And that's always really good to hear from an elected board, because sometimes if people don't get their way, maybe they don't want to support the project, but we've never had that in Ames. It's always been, okay, the decision's been made, let's all move forward together. And that's a really effective, functional way to run government. So we've been very, very lucky here at the City of Ames that we continue to move forward on projects and plans, and our elected officials clearly have the best interest of our citizens in mind when they make decisions.
Very good point. Yes, transparency and the allowing everybody to say their piece. Those are the times when you want to express your concerns and issues. And in the end, when we decide on something, we all need to pull together, go for that prize. That's for sure. Susan, our guest still has.
So and I'm not sure. having been off, I usually touch base with people before and. It's okay, because I have a lot of other thoughts. Yeah. I want to share with you some other things. Having been gone for so many days and being at home, and I don't know what happens at your house, but at my house, there's a lot of food right now. Yeah. A lot of food. And when I was thinking about what have I done to reduce my carbon footprint, what changes have I personally made, what kind of sacrifices do I look at in my future to better the quality of life here on the Earth? I mean, one of the positive things I think I do is participate in the food waste diversion program. I have a lot of food right now, and I'm not even sure it's possible to eat it all. And so I've been freezing things and trying to give food away. But one thing that I don't do is throw food in the garbage. That is the worst option. The best option, of course, is to consume food. But if you're not able to do it, I hope that people take advantage of our food waste diversion disposal option, which is located at the Resource Recovery Plant on 110 Center Avenue. You can take your food, not in any kind of bag or container, but dump the food product in the kind of a pink or reddish colored bin, and that food will get composted. And so it stays out of the waste stream, which of course, heavy, wet, liquid food is very bad for our waste stream because it aims we burn the waste to produce electricity, and things like potato peels and kind of wet, I always think about in the summer, watermelon, those big, thick watermelon rinds, that kind of stuff does not burn well. And so we want to separate that, and there is a better use for that, and that is as compost. So if you can take that to the Resource Recovery Plant, I take my glass at the same time. I drop my glass in the glass bin. I drop my food in the food waste bin. And I tell you, I throw away a lot less garbage these days than I ever used to because I was not aware how much food waste was making up the weight of my garbage. My garbage is lighter. It tends to be mostly paper products or what they call high BTU value waste, things that burn easily. And after the holidays, I'm sure people have a lot of stuff in their trash, so they probably could use the extra room.
And you point out recycling that food material and composting it. And I have been in situations where there's been a garbage disposal in the sink, and I always shied away from that. They're in some ways trouble as far as maintenance. It's hard on our sanitary system as well. Costs more, also increases your carbon footprint. The thing about you were saying trying to consume the food or sharing it, well, plan your meals a little bit better so you have less that accumulates that you do have to dispose. And that also cuts down on the carbon footprint in the long run. It may not immediately, but as individuals consume less, less will be produced, hopefully, and that won't add to the carbon footprint. I know Sam has a comment on that.
We have a gallon and a half container that we put our food waste in for composting, and take that out and mix it in with our compost pile out behind the garage once a week. And that's just really changed how much winds up in our throwaway garbage that goes to the city. It's really wonderful.
And it sure does a number on, really improves the plantings and things that they have around their yard. I also have the luxury, or whatever you'd like to say, to have a compost pile in my yard. Sure use it for a lot of plants outdoors, trees, things like that.
Well, that's a great point. I mean, I wish I was more on the ball, and because I do a fair amount of gardening, and I just have not gotten into figuring out where to put the compost or how to make it. I've had some bad luck in the past where my compost didn't compost. So I know that I probably need, it's not just magic. I probably need to be doing a little bit more chemistry there. Yeah, a lot of people have opted to make their own compost, and that's a great option. We certainly encourage that. I was thinking of some other things with this cold weather. I was thinking how I've been converting little parts of my yard into kind of prairie. I've been planting native flowers and trying to find bee-friendly kind of flowering plants that would be native, and have really enjoyed that. Every year it comes back a little bit thicker and a little bit better, and then I try to add a few more plants, and it seems to grow and take over a little bit more of the yard, which I really do appreciate. It's a really small thing, but I kind of think of all these things sort of added up. Well, I'm returning my glass. I'm using the food waste diversion program. I'm trying to reclaim some of my yard, so I'm not mowing it. It's more native. It requires, I have two rain barrels that I use. Little things. They're not huge. My house is not covered in solar panels, and I don't have a geothermal system, but I look at those things, and I think, what are some bigger investments I can make over time to be a better global citizen? So I hope other people are kind of thinking that way too. If nothing else, I hope climate action planning is making people think about their own impression and their what they leave here on the earth and what they're leaving for future generations. And of course, we always want to leave it better than we found it.
It's like you're saying, take advantage of what you can in your situation. It's the do what you can with what you got where you're at. And that's a paraphrase of what Teddy Roosevelt used to say. If you don't have solar panels or a heat pump, well, Ames has the solar farm that people can invest in. There's a way to do that.
Absolutely, yeah. And I do have a couple of panels, so I feel better about that. But of course, we have not quite sold out the solar farm. So our SunSmart Ames solar farm is located in South Ames. Kind of by the Sam's Club, and there are still some panels to purchase. If you're interested in that, you can go to cityofames.org/solar and get more information about purchasing a solar panel. And you actually invest in the panel for 20 years. If you're not planning to stay in Ames 20 years, it's okay. We buy them back. But each month, then, you get a small credit on your bill for the amount of solar energy that has been produced by that farm. And I get a couple of dollars every month credit for my panels, which is fun to see. And I feel like I'm supporting a diversified portfolio for the city of Ames. And again, that option is still out there. And I think we're looking to build more solar. So we're going to continue to look to diversify our portfolio. We have 36 megawatts of wind that we purchased from a local wind farm. We have the RDF, or the refuse-derived fuel, that we use to produce energy from garbage. And then we have the solar farm. So we're trying to basically green our energy as it comes into Ames or is dispersed to utility customers. I'm glad you pointed out that option for people whose homes maybe aren't ideally situated for solar, and so there's another option for them.
I want to circle back just briefly to this idea of home composting, and that is, if you decide to do that, do it in such a way that the critters, especially wildlife, it's protected from those folks, those little folks, because they will investigate if there are things in there that maybe they can use too. And sometimes it's a little messy if you don't set up your composting system properly. Maybe
good advice.
Yeah, maybe vermiculture, some worms in a little tub that you have them do the composting. There's all kinds of ways. And in fact, Susan, you should send a suggestion to the OLLI committee. Sam's on the curriculum committee about, hey, let's do a home composting class. Sam?
I would be surprised if they don't have one. I would hope they have one. It was a great idea.
Yeah. Susan, anything else before we close?
Now, again, as you mentioned when we started, we are closed on Friday, and then we'll be back in the new year, so that's exciting. Actually, I'll see you in a couple of days, but yeah, we are closed on Friday. City Hall and most offices closed on Friday.
Well, hopefully, as we approach, you have a happy new year as the other folks that have joined us today. So thank you, Susan Guiasta. She's our public information officer for the City of Ames.
Daylight come and me wan go home.
Work all night and I drink a rum.
We like come and we want home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
We like come.
And welcome back, Anna Banana. We're glad you rejoined the bunch before we got too ripe here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I missed you guys last week.
We missed
so
you.
Yeah.
We missed
thank you.
And if you heard, we have some listeners out there that we all got together, tried to raise some money and get you a different joke book.
Oh, dear. Well, you don't like my Google research?
It wasn't me. It was some listeners. And we're just, you know, we want to serve our listeners. This is our community radio station.
Well, I just wanted to say thanks to Local Talk 2. I have some New Year's resolutions, making sure that I don't put my food waste into the garbage can. That's a good one. And also, I need to take an Ollie class sometime. Even though I'm not quite 50, I can sign up, right?
Nobody gets carded in the Ollie program.
Woohoo! Well, what is this? It is Tune In Tuesday as I try and tempt you to listen to KHOY. So, Mike Metz, here we go. We're going to kick it off with one of my really, really great jokes. And for you listeners out there, I'm looking forward to your feedback in the joke book. Why should you stand on just your left foot during the New Year's Eve countdown? Only your left foot. Just stand on your left foot.
Just stand on my left foot because I can't stand on my right foot.
Because you want to start the new year on the right foot.
Oh. Is that what you were going to say, Mike?
Well, close. I was going to say start the new year off right. If you were only standing on the left foot.
Either way. All right, Sam,
realize that Mike and I do science bites. We have a science joke for you.
Okay.
Okay, two neutrinos walk into the bar, and the barkeep says, "What did you have?" What's their answer?
I have no idea.
We're
just passing through. All right. Well, we're just passing through. Oh, goodness. Poor listeners out there. All right. So, Sam Wormley, this one's for you. What food should you avoid on New Year's?
Drinking and driving.
Well, yes, of course. And firecrackers. So speaking of firecrackers and starting the new year on the right foot, be sure to tune in to one of our favorite KHOY shows, the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, who will take a look back and a look forward. They'll be celebrating winter feasts. Donna gives some advice for New Year's libations and a recipe for a warming winter fish chowder. Lana looks at some news items and thoughts of past Donna Lana Kitchen shows. Now, what is this Donna Lana Kitchen Show? They talk about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinions. Chef Donna and Farmer Lana explore the local food scene with lively discussion and good humor on Tuesdays at noon and repeated at 7 p.m. It sounds like a great show. All right, so Mike Metz, where can you go to practice math on New Year's Eve?
Practice math on New Year's Eve. Something.
Oh, Sam Wormley knows.
Okay, Sam.
Times Square.
You got it, Sam. Doo-doo-doo-doo. So will we be practicing?
We've got a winner.
I thought it would be, I'm a tree.
Yes.
Geometry.
Well, will you be talking about trees or math on Science Bites, Mike and Sam?
Anna, what we're going to do is we're going to reprise the role of a conversation with Papa Joe. Sam, I want you to just briefly describe what we're doing.
What Mike is referring to is a set of four stories that were published by astronomer Alan Lightman way back in the 80s. And the stories are comprised of the astronomer talking with his great-grandfather, who seems to materialize in the smoke of the pipe, of great-grandfather's pipe, when the astronomer is smoking it. And so he wants to know what's happened in the last 60 years, and how do you know how far stars away, how bright are they, and all that. And in the process of these four stories, you learn about the basics of astronomy. So Mike and I have dramatized this story. Mike is Papa Joe, and I'm the astronomer. We basically tell the story of astronomy over four episodes, which are aired two at a time over the next 2 weeks.
Right. So, Anna, I want you to listen, because I do think, like an electron, you'll get a charge out of it.
Nice. I think you need a joke book. Just kidding. All right. So after listening to Science Bites, which I am a big fan, you can later tune in at 8:30 p.m. to listen to the Heart to Heart Messages show. But as we were thinking about New Year's, I wanted to say, please tune into Heart to Heart Messages. But I found this really great poem that I think as we get ready to say goodbye to 2021, bye-bye, and hello to 2022, I like this poem that I found about celebrating the New Year. So I'm going to read it. Is that okay?
Yes.
All right. Here I go. Let's see how I do. I'm writing this in a state of shock, watching the clock tick-tock, tick-tock, advancing, approaching relentlessly. A brand new year? Oh, can it be? The calendar says the same thing, too. Time races, vanishes for me. Boo-hoo. No, wait. If time flies, I'm having fun. A year of fun. It's gone. It's done. I now embrace the blur of time because it simply means that I'm too busy with pleasure, joy, delight to mourn the passing days, swift flight. So I'm wishing you fast, happy days, pleasuring you in myriad of ways, filled with happiness and cheer. Oh, happy, happy, bright new year. And so that is my heart-to-heart messages, message for you today, and also encouragement to listen to heart-to-heart messages when? Tonight at 8:30 p.m. Now, speaking of happiness and cheer, Mike Murphy, how did Prince celebrate the new millennium? Do you know?
Like it was 1999.
That's right. One of my favorite songs to do my dance party to. So speaking of partying like it's 1999, what are the music shows on Tuesday and Thursday? What's happening in the music world with Eric B. and Mike Murphy?
So Eric B., as you know, is now on Tuesdays from 2 to 4 p.m. So he will be in later today. And it's always fun and entertaining to hear what Eric has to offer. And I will be on 2 to 4 on Thursday. We're presenting music through a progressive lens, progressive rock music, music that's a little bit more complicated than three chords and the truth. And so that's going to be happening on Thursday from 2 to 4, and Eric's on today from 2 to 4.
Ooh, that's great. A lot going on to have a dance party if you turn into KHOI. I don't know if you can listen, if you can do dancing to progressive music, but I will find a way, and a banana will. Indeed.
Just one step at a time.
One step at a time, that's right. So as we, is Pat Slarbrum in the house? I didn't even get to ask
No, but you can ask his, why don't you ask Sam Pat? Pat is, I think Pat might be listening, but he may be outdoors around Garden Grove this morning.
Well, Pat, we miss you, but we're glad that you're part of the KHOI Tune-In team, in our heart always. So Sam, where can you find comedians on New Year's Eve?
Oh, I have no idea.
Waiting for the punchline.
Oh,
and why, and while you still may be waiting for the punchline, you never have to wait for your community radio station's great programming on KHOI, like All Things Piano with Tom Russell, the Don Alana Kitchen Show, KHOI's Jukebox with Eric B., you name it, Community Bookshelf, Heart to Heart Messages, and of course Science Bites, just to name a few of your listening options to make your day a great one. Now, Sam, this is one for you as well. To close out the Tune-In Tuesday heart-to-heart messages, what do you say when bidding farewell on December 31st?
This is what I say.
Okay.
The World Wide Web is an extremely useful resource, utility, and convenience, but it's also a dangerous place with bad guys relentlessly trying to steal your information, habits, money, and identity. My advice, stay informed, be safe, and help others.
And be kind.
All right, well. Yeah, be kind, or see you next year. And so now it is time for me to say, see you next year, and give it back to our news team to close out our local talk show.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Mike Murphy. And thank you, producer Lynn Carey, for all your assistance. You heard from Stephanie and Todd Burris, Dr. Tyler Harms, Sam Wormley, and Carol Johns. And you also heard from Susan Guiasta, our public information officer for the City of Ames. Remember that you can hear this online at khoifm.org. Find links to our guests and information you heard during this program. I've been your host, Mike Metz.
Our website is khoifm.org. Please consider becoming a member and making KHOI your community radio station with your financial support. Go to our website, again, at khoifm.org, and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member and closing out your year by supporting your local community radio station. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!, followed by All Things Piano at 9 a.m. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from the CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And
see you again.
See you again.
On the radio. On the radio.
This is KHOI, Story City, Ames.
Radio station in our area.